So we're doing session 5 today on interconnection. And last week we spoke about raising issues and expressing needs to the soul. And today we're going to be moving ahead and talking about a very important session on tolerating the body's idiosyncrasies with love and patience, being patient with ourselves, self-compassion. So just let's briefly review interconnection part 3, expressing needs and expressing issues rather and raising needs to the soul. So, again, just to go back, interconnection, the world of interconnection is about building a relationship between our soul and our body. And it is a spiritual enterprise in that we are connecting to the part of us which comes from God. But the focus is really on building connection right here, right inside of ourselves. We're not ready to reach out just yet. Next week, in fact, we're going to be moving beyond and talking about interpersonal connection. And then in another 5 or 6 weeks, I guess, we're going to be talking about spiritual connection and directly reaching out to God. But for now, it's about interconnection, about our body and our soul connecting. And we've had three main sessions, well, four with the introductory, and then we had three main ones so far. One of them was about the body accepting guidance of the soul, even if it's difficult or sitting with distress. That's something that the body does to connect to the soul. The next one was about the soul providing for the body's needs, taking care of it, loving it in a loving, caring, supportive way, its physical needs and its spiritual needs of the body. Last week, last session, we spoke about what the body has to do again, which was opening up, expressing issues, and raising needs to the soul. And today, we're going to flip back and talk about another thing that the soul has to do, which is tolerating the body's idiosyncrasies. But again, going over interconnection part 3, let's just review it a little bit. In order to either express needs or to raise issues to the soul, the first step is to appreciate what it means to have a soul, to appreciate that we have a part of God right inside of us. And unlike animals, the animals are orphans. They don't have a parent. They don't have a guide is built in right there for them to be. When an animal is on its own, it's literally alone. When we're on our own, we're not alone. We have somebody right there with us. We have our parent, we have our soul, who's devoted to taking care of us and to providing us with guidance throughout our life. Since you have a soul, you have a partner, and you're not alone in facing adversity. And I'm sure many of you have had this experience where you were trying to figure out a problem, and you manage to find a quiet space in your mind, and the answer popped into your mind.
And the answer popped right into your mind. And that is the soul. That's the soul speaking to the body and saying what to do. And because the soul is literally a part of God, and opening up with those issues, talking about what the needs are and expressing them, firstly, appreciating that we have a soul, and then doing so is very much a divine service and an interconnection service. With regards to expressing needs, it's pretty straightforward. Basically, it means that the body tells the soul, hey, this is what I want, and it's either a spiritual need or a physical need. The main challenge is to get over this feeling of it being ashamed. Sometimes people are ashamed or they feel guilty or disgusted by their own preferences. Sometimes they feel that describing their preferences makes them weak. In some regards, that's true. Because if we have a need and we have a preference and we need somebody to take care of that for us, well, then that does expose a weakness or a vulnerability, if you will. But the body has to know that by expressing its need and describing it to its soul, it has to overcome that feeling of feeling ashamed and feeling indebted and feeling vulnerable by reaching inside and opening up and trusting the soul that the soul won't hurt it. And with regards to whether the soul hurts it or not, we'll talk about that today, in fact. Another thing is that a lot of the body's needs, they don't make sense. They're irrational. They're not necessary by a standard of Western culture, and not even by the soul's standards. Ice cream is not necessary. You can get the caloric content by eating crackers. Same number of carbohydrates, same macronutrients, and same levels of calories to sustain you. But the body needs ice cream because it likes ice cream. And according to the connections paradigm, that's good because it creates an opportunity for the soul to love the body, and the body can open up and express its needs. As well, simply because the body has a preference or a desire of course, it doesn't mean that the soul is going to serve the request. There are some cases, I'd even say, I don't know, in many cases, but there are certainly some cases where it's to the body's disadvantage. It would be disconnection and unhelpful to the body for the soul to provide for that. I'll give you a classic example with cigarettes. Somebody's quitting smoking, their body might say, hey, I really, 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 really want a cigarette. And the soul would say, thank you so much for telling me, but we can't smoke. What can we do? A really strong black coffee, go for a run, some oranges, do you want to go hang out with somebody? Do you want to play a video game? Is there anything we can do to make it better for you? Because I'm really sorry you're having a craving, but I can't give you a cigarette because that would be disconnection. That wouldn't be good for you. But nevertheless, the body has to express itself and say, hey, this is what I'm having, this is what I want. And the soul, its job in return is to tolerate that, and we'll talk about that today. Then there's raising issues, and that's a lot more complicated because it involves the body initiating this back and forth discussion and the soul engaging with the body about that. It's a dynamic process because it involves both body and soul, but it originates with the body. The body would speak its mind and say without any constraints. And I hope you all saw that video. It's not about the nail. It's a classic, great video. It's only 2 minutes, well worth your time. And it's a great example of a body who just needs to say, in this case, her piece. And second, the soul would say, hey, how do you want to proceed? Do you want me to continue telling me what's going on? Do you want me to listen? Or do you want guidance? Do you want assistance? And the body might say, I just want you to listen, in which case it's not about the nail. It's just about hearing the body out. But the body might say, you know what, yeah, I actually do need help. And then the soul will come back and describe the problem succinctly, brainstorm, identify pros and cons, and then help the body to implement and select a solution, and it doesn't feel alone. And that is, in a nutshell, what we spoke about last week. Okay. So with that, let's move on to interconnection part 4, tolerating the body's idiosyncrasies with love and patience. Okay, so we've discussed that the body and soul are these complementary opposites. They're diametrically opposed and contrasting with one another. On the one hand, it's good news because that means that each entity can offer the other something that they wouldn't have on their own. Since there's a contrast between body and soul, that calls for and it facilitates their connection. Because what's novel about the body is exciting to the soul because it's different, and what's novel about the soul is exciting and different to the body. But on the other hand, it's bad news because the soul is going to stress out the body a lot, like we spoke about in session 2, and the body has to sit in with the stress as a result of that, as we spoke about in session 2. But so too, there are also going to be times when the body does things that irritate and irk the soul, and the soul needs to tolerate the body when those occur. To provide a little more context here, the soul is a pure, holy entity, and it instinctively knows what perfection looks like, and it demands that perfection. But it can make a big error, and it can expect that the body be perfect, expect, as opposed to having a vision of what the body could do. There's a disparity between theory and reality, and that's what this session is about. If the soul makes that error and expects more from the body than it's capable of achieving, then it will not tolerate the body's idiosyncrasies and it will create disconnection and a significant amount of it. Now, this is not to say that the soul should give up on the body. It shouldn't say, oh, my body's never going to reach its dreams. He's never going to, whatever, lose that 10 pounds. He's never going to run that race. He's never going to achieve what he wants professionally or emotionally or in terms of character development or in terms of moods or in terms of whatever it is. The soul can't give up. It has to maintain faith that the body's ultimately able to achieve its goals and dreams, regardless of how lofty those are. And we'll speak about lofty goals in the end of our sessions when we talk about spiritual connection. But the soul has to make a long-term approach, a very long-term approach. At most points throughout a person's life, there's going to be a huge disparity between what your goals are and what your present functioning is. And the soul has to learn to tolerate that disparity. This is an essential process that any educator, any teacher, any soul needs to master in order to connect to his or her students including the body. And today's session, that's what we're focusing on, connecting through through tolerance. There are different areas of tolerance. We're going to talk about language, we're going to talk about cycles, and then we're going to talk about behavior change. So language. The soul needs to accept that the body has a very different language. The languages of the body and the soul have less in common than the language of English and Swahili. So that's not very much in common at all. The soul is non-physical, and it speaks the language of ideas. It has these broad, huge concepts of values, higher order things that it wants the body to accomplish. The body is physical, though, and it speaks the language of action. It needs to go left. It needs to know go left, go right, go up, go down, because ideas are temporarily engaging for the body, but it's philosophy, and it doesn't penetrate the body unless it's distilled into clear, unambiguous behavioral guidelines. For the soul to connect, it has to recognize and accept that the body is a very different approach to life, and it has to take the time and effort to translate those lofty visions and dreams into the language of action. In doing so, it has to reach beyond itself and think about, what does the body need to hear? Like, not, am I demanding something which is fair, is it not fair? The point is, what does my body need me to say in order to get him or her to the next step of his or her development? I'll give you some examples. When I go, when I teach, and also when I do clinical work, I often ask my patients or my students, what are your goals in life? And they'll give me these big, broad ideas. Be a good friend, be reliable, be productive, be a spiritual person. All those they sound like great values and great goals, right? But the problem is they're wonderful things to strive for, but they're terrible goals for the body because they're very lofty. And just pursuing being a good friend or being reliable, living productively, being spiritual, being less depressed even, whatever it is, being happier, those are not visions that the body can actually translate into its language, which is the language of action. If the body were to pursue those goals without further clarification, it's going to fail. Because the soul has to, in order to be successful, the soul, as a teacher, the soul has to educate the body and distill its lofty visions into practical, real-world terms. I'll give you an example. Everyone knows that smoking is bad for your health, but quitting requires a very specific plan, hanging out with people indoors during work breaks. It's a huge factor. Eating carrots when you have cravings or going for a walk. Here's another one. No smoking before 9 a.m. Also, one day at a time. Those are very concrete behavioral ways, and that ultimately in smoking cessation is what does the trick, not the idea of quit smoking, which is a big, lofty, even that's somewhat behavioral because it's actually a behavior, not smoking, but it's not practical enough. And there's a well-known acronym to do this, which is pretty widely used in the field of modern psychology today, called SMART. SMART is an acronym for specific and measurable, SM, and then available, reasonable, AR, and then T, timed. And any goal, this is the language of the body, to clarify. And the soul needs to give the body SMART goals. Specific and measurable means that it has to be something that you can see or measure, something you can actually tell in behavioral terms when it gets done. If there's ambiguity whether you've achieved a goal, then that's poison because the body is not going to feel as if it accomplished anything. It's always going to fall short. For example, being a good friend means doing more nice things for a very specific person. Do one nice thing a day for them. Being a reliable person, well, that is being more punctual to a class. That means coming on time to class. If the class meets 12 times in a semester, then showing up on time at least 10 times. That's specific. It's measurable. You know whether you did it or whether you didn't. And the body needs to hear things in specific, measurable terms. Available and reasonable are also important. That means that the goals have to be in reach. If you want to destroy a child or a body, encourage it to take on projects that are way beyond its developmental level. Any goal that you give should be a no-brainer. It should be something that you know that you can do. Better yet, it should be something that your soul knows that you can do, and broken into really small steps. I'll give you an example. Is running a marathon. So you have to have a 10-mile run, 12-mile run, 14, 16, 18, and 20, plus other runs in the middle. And that happens over a period of 10 to 15, maybe 20, even 20 or 30 weeks, half a year. It's a huge amount of distance to cover, but it has to be broken up into small steps, smaller steps. Another one is timed. Oh, by the way, suffice it, of course, it goes without saying that available reasonable means if you go out to run a marathon and you just put down 20 miles and you haven't run one, you're going to lose. You're going to lose. But it's the same thing with everything in life. Asking more of our body than he or she is capable of is disconnection. Another thing is timed. This is the T in SMART. If we add time parameters to our goals, it makes them much more reasonable. For example, if we're going to do something nice for a friend, do it at least, just as an example, if we put on a time of it, at least 2 Fridays every month. Or showing up to class on time means before the start, once each week, one of your classes, once each week. For running, it could be something like getting out of the house, putting on sneakers, and doing it twice a week. Now, it's challenging for the soul to create these SMART goals because it takes a lot of time, and you have to translate these lofty visions into these mundane, simplistic, microscopic parts, and it means giving up on some part of the vision. It's much more exciting for the soul to just think about saving the world, doing amazing things, than giving a dollar to charity on a daily basis. That's boring, but that's the way the body thinks. The fact that the body speaks this language of action, though, it's a tremendous test of patience and a great opportunity, because the success or failure of the soul with this test will create connection or disconnection and ultimately determine whether the body is successful. So that's with regards to language. When it comes to language, the body speaks the language of action, and the soul needs to translate its visions, its lofty, higher-ordered visions, into very small mechanistic steps. Okay, number two is body cycles. Now, we've discussed this a little bit previously in session one, that the body is physical, and all elements of the physical world cycle, whether it's seasons, day and night, circadian rhythms, anything in the physical world goes through periods of growth, contraction, basically death, and then rebirth. That is the way that the physical world works. And the body is no different. It has levels of engagement and success, which are either preceded or followed by setbacks and failure and rebirth or regrowth. That is the way that the body works. And the soul has to accept it, that when the body has a high point, you know it's going to have a setback. You know it's going to fall. The body's level of enthusiasm, it's going to wax and it's going to wane. It's going to go high and it's going to go low. Perfect example is a romantic relationship. What happens at the beginning of a romantic relationship? People are walking on air. In the sky, nothing's wrong. You know, if they have pain, they don't feel it. If something's going bad at work, it doesn't matter. And then what happens? 2 months in, 3 months in, 6 months in. And that's the nature of the body. So therefore, when the body hits a rough patch, the soul has to know that that doesn't mean that it's over, and it doesn't mean that it should give up. Many people or many souls make an error. They see the body's having a setback, and they say, wow, it's not interested, it's not engaged, there's a real problem, and, you know, maybe I should jump ship. As a result, the body gives up because, hey, if my future gave up on me, then I'm for sure done. And then the body gives up on the activity. Then its enthusiasm literally dies. And that's complete connection, because now the soul is disconnected from the body and the body is disconnected from its activity, and it's not pursuing goals, dreams, visions, and then you end up, well, in my office. The real tragedy, though, is that if the soul were to just encourage the body to remain engaged in the task, just to stick with it, even partially, despite its low levels of enthusiasm or interest, it can be sure that the body's motivation is going to rekindle, because it's going to grow. It's just a matter of time. If you stick with something long enough, eventually it will come through. So the soul has to accept from the get-go that the body is going to experience cycles and setbacks, and not interpret those as anything worth getting upset over. The body cycles are actually to be celebrated because, well, what's the big deal in training somebody if they don't have setbacks? I mean, the real celebration at the Olympics is people who made a comeback, people who got injured, people who had no chance, and then their coach helped them through and their coach believed in them. Those are the stories that you read about. Those are the stories that really touch our hearts. Anyhow. Another thing is that we have to understand the body is a very different process of behavior change than the soul would expect or does expect. Teaching the body to change, it's kind of like agriculture. It's a very organic process, and it happens over time. It doesn't happen quickly. On the one hand, this is bad news because the pace is so slow. Behavior change is slow, and on the other hand, though, all the elements that one needs, though, in order to grow a piece of something in agriculture, they're actually readily available: sun, water, air. The key ingredient, in fact, when it comes to agriculture is time, and it's the same thing with the body. And time happens without any effort on our part at all. We just have to be patient and wait. And if a body engages in an activity constantly, small activities, it will change over time. You have a guarantee. There's a simple formula, in fact, for behavior change. There's change equals the size or intensity of the change over time. If you want to make a big behavior change, there are two options. Make larger changes over a small amount of time or small changes over a large amount of time. The problem with large changes over a small amount of time, though, is that typically you end up injured. It doesn't work. The body gets freaked out and stops. Tolerating the body's idiosyncrasies involves maximizing time and minimizing the size or intensity of an activity. The best coaches out there will hold their athletes back. No, you're not ready for that exercise. No, you're not ready to do that. That's going to be too much for you. I want you to do less, but I want you to do it for longer. Think big by thinking small in the short run. That's the soul, to clarify. The best dynamic, I'll give you a perfect example here is religiously. The soul might say to the body, I want you to take on something in terms of your spirituality. And this could be huge for you. I really know that you can do it, and I believe in you. And the soul says, great, let's, you know, take on fasting every Monday and Thursday for the next 3 months. The body says, I'm going to take on fasting every Monday and Thursday for the next 3 months. And the soul, I hope, says, no, that's not what I meant. What I meant was to be more mindful of caloric intake, during the week, and to specifically do it in this way. And the body's like, I didn't realize, you know, it's got to be that small. Yes. And that would be a great dynamic where the soul plants a seed, if you will. The body wants to take off, and then the soul brings it back and says, hold on, whoa, Nelly, let's go slowly here. That's a great dynamic. Sometimes the body needs a little bit of encouragement. This is like, what's going to be if I only do a tiny little thing? And it has to know, soul has to believe in it and say, hey, we're going to do this. Just small changes over time yield large changes in the long term. The most effective strategies for long-term change maximize time and minimize intensity. So bite off too little. You can always bite off more, but if you bite off too much, then it can get ugly. I'll give you an example. Making a small but consistent change can yield a massive impact. Let's say somebody's struggling to get out of bed. Pick one day a week. Make it a Monday because it's at the beginning of the week. So if someone wants to be more reliable and get out of bed on time, get out of bed on time on Mondays. If your alarm goes off at 7:30 on Mondays, 6:30, whenever, that's when you're out of bed. That would be an example. Not every day, not 4:30 days, not 4:60 days. Those are huge goals. One day a week. Always on a Monday, that's your day. Here's another one. Somebody wants to be less shy. They note that their body needs to be less shy. It's shy, doesn't learn as much. She doesn't have as many friends. So then one thing you could do is ask one substantive question, a real question, to a supervisor or a colleague one day a week. And that becomes an activity, if you will, an avoda, to assign the body, to help the body do it. Simple, one day a week, reach out to somebody. Being more tolerant of others, after 8 p.m. on a Sunday night, don't yell at not even all the kids, just that one kid, just one of them. And pick the easiest one if you have more than one child. Here's another one. Someone who wants to be more spiritual, engage in prayer, say three words to God once per day. That is a reasonable goal. If you're already saying three, then bump it up to four. But the idea is to pick a present target that in your present state is a no-brainer. Because if you just open up a small hole, then eventually it will naturally widen over time. And this is a very stark contrast to Western education. Western education tends to maximize the size and intensity and minimize the time. We expect people in 12-week semesters to master all of Western civilization history. It's crazy. It's actually crazy. We don't have enough faith. The reason why is because the Western culture doesn't have enough faith to recognize that the body it was created by God, and it has immense, incredible potential to achieve lofty goals. We just have to give it direction, commitment, love, and like I said today, time to grow. Okay, now here's an exercise to practice tolerating the body's idiosyncrasies with love and patience. This is an advanced exercise. It's a hard one, and it's going to draw upon a lot of the exercises we've been doing for the last few weeks, and it's a three-minute exercise. We can try to do it now. We discussed before that the body is physical and it has these cycles. So on occasion, the body is going to wane or waver in its enthusiasm and its engagement to valued behaviors. It's not an indication that the body's damaged. It doesn't mean the body's broken. It doesn't mean it's a failure. It's just a fact of life. It means that our souls need to accept the fact that it's a fact of life that our souls need to accept. That's what I'm trying to say. And for our exercise, try to conjure up a recent event where your body fell short, something that your body did that it shouldn't have done, something that it didn't do that it was supposed to do, and think about it. Think about it deeply. Think about the real effects of, I don't know, sleeping in or not doing well on an exam or missing a goal for something or losing control and yelling at somebody or something even more egregious, committing some sort of a spiritual or religious infraction that you're not proud of. And think about how it fell short, how disappointed you felt, and feel the pain and discomfort. I'm talking about your soul. Feeling the pain and disillusionment of being let down by your body. Now, having done that, and I'll encourage you for homework to do that for 90 seconds, have your soul speak words of encouragement and love to your body, to say that setbacks are a part of the process of growth, and that cycles are to be celebrated, because without them, then there's nothing to rejoice when we grow. And to convey that your soul loves your body and that your love is unconditional. And even if it failed, then whether it failed or not, it doesn't matter. You're still there for him or her. And that whether it's successful or not, ultimately you love it. You love him or you love her and you adore him or her because he is your child. And that's the exercise. 90 seconds of thinking about a recent event where you fell short and 90 seconds of encouragement and unconditional love, tolerating the body's idiosyncrasies with love and patience. And that is the very powerful exercise that I'm introducing you today. So that's our new exercise. Tolerate the body, just like we did today. And what's going to be on your chart going forward is this. One is tolerating the body. Another one is expressing needs or raising issues to the soul. The third one is going to be providing for your body's physical and spiritual needs. And we're taking off the other two, the other one exercise. It's really going to be two exercises that we're continuing to do that are off. The first one is the body-soul conversations, although that in some ways is still on your activity because you're having these discussions with yourself. You're still doing it from at least from last week. And the other one was providing for the body's needs. Now, of course, continue to do that. Keep taking care of your body. Your body will be happy. Your soul will be happy. And you'll be more connected. Next week, we are shifting gears. We are moving into the world of interpersonal connection. Now, of course, there's more to say about interconnection, but this is a good primer. These five sessions provide a good overview of what it is to have a body and a soul, and different ways that the body can connect to the soul, different ways that the soul can connect to the body. And ultimately, this is the firm foundation that we'll need in order to move forward and maximize our connection with others, and then ultimately, and towards the end of the program, maximize our connection with God as well. Okay, David, I think that's a wrap. So are there any questions or anything to discuss?
I was wondering if you could elaborate on something you said earlier on about what we expect versus the vision of what the body can do. I think
sure.
on one hand you would have you can have a laziness, and on the other hand you could have burnout, and there's that sweet spot in the middle. So can you elaborate on how to find that so that people don't err on, you know, and become lazy or burn out?
I'm not worried about people becoming lazy today. I think that most of the laziness that we see is a function of people pushing themselves too hard, not enough. If in our society, the tendency of anything is to push too hard in the short run and to be disappointed and then to give up on all our dreams. Most of the depression that we see around is really a function of that. And the cure in many ways is to pick smaller goals. One of the best treatments for depression, this is not all the case for all cases of depression, of course, but I'm generalizing here, but one of the best treatments for it is called behavioral activation, which means taking on small goals and hitting them on a weekly basis. For example, going out and spending time with friends with every 48 hours, exercising once a day, getting out of the house, having a bedtime and getting to bed on time instead of ruminating at night. Very small goals. And the reason that that's the cure, if you will, one of the best strategies, is because our soul is giving our body small goals, and our body is doing them, and the two feel connected. I think it creates connection when we do that. So, to me, I think the biggest danger we have today is asking our bodies to do too much, not too little. And a body that doesn't want to do anything, it's usually because it's been abused. There was an example I was going to give during the session, and I glossed over it, but maybe I'll say it now. Learned helplessness. I don't know if you know about this concept, learned helplessness. Martin Seligman was the one who wrote about it. He did some experiments which, any animal lovers out there, you're not going to like this, but what he did is he brought these dogs into a laboratory, and he started administering very painful shocks underneath on the floor. He used an electric grid on the floor of the laboratory, but the animals were in a cage. They were in a cage that was specifically built to be only a couple of inches higher than the animals could physically jump. So if you put an animal in there, one of the dogs that could only jump 2 feet, the cage around it was 2 feet, 2 inches. And these animals were being shocked, and they could not get out. At first, they tried to get out, and after 2 or 3 minutes, the animals actually stopped trying because they realized they were just wasting energy, and they were lying on the floor of this cage being shocked, and there was nothing that they could do about it. They learned to be helpless. The next week, Dr. Seligman brought them into the lab again, and he started administering the shocks, but this time the fence was reduced to 1.5 feet, and they could have jumped out. And the dogs, they had learned to be helpless. They had learned that there's no point in jumping, and they didn't even try, even though they could get out. And the lesson is, if you ask your body to do too much, eventually it will learn to be helpless, and that's the problem. So to me, I think that's the bigger danger that we face today.